Welcome to episode 6 of Tech Talk Guys with Bill and Joe. Today we're going to be catching up on the last 2 years, and we're going to talk about cloud computing.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Guys.
Welcome back, Joe.
After what, a 2 year?
More than 2 years.
More than 2 year hiatus.
A couple of days.
We have finally hit the internet waves again.
You know, it's kind of cool. This time we did it a little different. Instead of doing this conversation over Skype, we actually met, had a little dinner, and sat down and recorded a show.
Yeah, we're currently in Bill's living room. Senator McCain is frozen on the screen with an interesting grimace with the DVR. And yeah, we had a little bit of Indian food cooked by your wife. Thank you for that.
Yeah, it was a first try on the Indian food. So that was a little experiment. I think it all went well.
And I gauged it for authenticity.
As only you can.
Which it was. It was actually very good.
But it was northern India, not southern India.
Yeah, I'm from the south, and that was definitely a northern more flavor. But
well, we'll work on that for next time. Okay. All right. So, well, what are we going to do? A 2 year recap?
Yeah. I think when we left off, there was rumors about Apple coming out with an iPhone.
What's that?
I have no idea. Apparently, they actually released one. It wasn't good enough. They released a second one, and there's even been firmware updates for that one since it's been out. So if you haven't noticed, yes, the iPhone did happen. You heard it here first on Tech Talk, guys.
Yeah, that was a pretty good find. If you go back to episode 5, Joe was talking about how digging into the guts of iTunes 7, they had all these references to mobile phones. And yeah, in mid-2007, the iPhone came out. I actually got one for my wife, a 4-gig iPod, a 4-gig iPhone, and I immediately hacked it. I spent the rest of my vacation when we bought it hacking it and had a lot of fun with it.
Use a jailbreak or were you?
Yep, use jailbreak. And then, you know, what's happened over time is the need to jailbreak the phone has gone away. So we actually rolled back the base OS on it and are using the newest version of the OS. And since then, back in August of this year, I just bought an iPhone 3G, and I experienced some of the problems people did. I didn't have the drop call problem with the iPhone.
Right.
But I did have the horrible battery life. And I got to say, with the 2.01 software release, it's been great. I can leave it on 3G mode all day long. I can leave the Wi-Fi on all day long at work. And by the time I'm ready to leave, I still have a good 40% of the battery left. Before that update, I couldn't even go 3 hours and the battery was noticeably depleted.
Yeah, having especially like exchange connection, I can imagine with big power consumption. I even noticed that after my new job, I got to exchange server on my phone. Well, exchange support on my phone. And yeah, the battery life just destroyed it now. So I'm glad to hear that the iPhone fixing that up.
Yeah, it made a big difference. Definitely the battery life was my major gripe. I had to carry a charger with me everywhere. I got a charger for the car. Always made sure I had an iPhone cable with me at work so I could always sync it up just to make sure I had battery to get home. And one of the things that I noticed, you've ever heard of that term, the 3G buzz, where the sound is like comes across speakers and things from the cell phone?
Oh, yeah.
I have a FM transmitter for my car, and the iPhone 3G initially had a very, very fast buzz rate. It was like the cadence of it was, I don't know, maybe like 170, 180 beats per minute kind of sound. And then after I uploaded the new firmware onto the iPhone, the speed of that buzz is slower than it was before. It actually slowed down to like maybe 120 beats per minute speed when you hear it coming across. So I think what they did is they dialed back the speed of that chip so it doesn't pulse as quickly, thereby conserving battery life.
Okay.
So that was one benefit. You can actually hear over the speakers if you listen.
Well, actually, since then, there's been several phones that try to match up the iPhone as far as its touch interface and everything like that. I definitely think the iPhone is the best full touchscreen smartphone out there. But LG has come out with a few lower end for not so much the high end user, but for, you know, some of these college students and high school students, they've got these LG's Explorers and things like that that have the touchscreen interface. And in fact, I got the Samsung Instinct for my wife, which that's a change from the last podcast.
Yes, right, small changes small have change. Happened since we've
we'll
done this podcast.
We'll touch on that in a second. We got to talk about the Instinct first. But yeah, I got to look for my wife. She's actually here while we're recording, so she's had to grimace through while Bill and I got our setups going. But to get on point, the Instinct is supposedly an iPhone killer. I don't really see it as even on the same plane. It's definitely a very, very nice interface. It's very thin, very slim, full touchscreen with the touchscreen keyboard. The one thing I do like about it over the iPhone, I don't know if you play with it, is that it clicks when you type. So even though you're touching just a flat screen, there's actually, it almost feels like if you took a pen spring and just flicked it, that little reverberation.
So it's actually using the vibration motor.
The vibration motor in there. And so also when you flick through your contacts, you get that like almost like I don't know what do you the Price is Right kind of that. And it actually makes it a really nice tactile feeling, even though there's actually nothing physically moving.
I think the iPhone actually has some of that. Like if you scroll through contacts pretty fast, it'll make a little bit of a vibration and a sound, but not a heavy one. I think in classic Apple form, you know, Steve Jobs being the master marketer that he is, has always tried to keep one step ahead of the rest of the marketplace. So as everybody's come out with these phones that can mimic the touchscreen functionality, they take it one step further and release the App Store,
yep,
where you can download these incredible applications. You know, I've spent probably only about $20 on applications total for my phone. I've got probably over 50 or 60 apps running. A lot of the free apps do exactly what I need to do. And one report is that Apple's making up almost $1 million a day now just wow, through App Store sales. So I think, you know, If these other phone platforms are going to take off, they're going to have to mimic that functionality as well.
And that's definitely a big difference that you see between these other sorts of phones. Now, you're going to get some interesting competition from your BlackBerry Thunder or Storm, as what I've heard, which is a full screen BlackBerry now, when the BlackBerry finally has released its tactile keyboard, is now doing this touchscreen kind of keyboard, which from what I understand, when you do that, the screen isn't like a hard surface screen like the iPhone. It actually is tactile to some degree. It has some sort of give to it. But from the reviews I read on the Boy Genius Report and things like that, it's really kind of clunky and they're not really impressed.
Well, my phone right before the iPhone 3G was a BlackBerry 8800. And I really liked it. It was a good phone. It was the best phone it had up until that point. It had GPS, which was a very nice functionality, especially integrating Google when you could have traffic alerts and things like that if you're in a larger city. And I love that functionality. I did not like the trackball on the 8800. It was a little clunky to use, not very precise or accurate. But definitely, if you wanted to write an email, it's much easier to do on a BlackBerry than it is to do on an iPhone.
Sure.
An interesting statistic is the fact that BlackBerry still dominate the smartphone market.
Yeah.
They're like 44%, and the iPhone has made a dent, but it's still not that high. I think it's like 10 or 19%. I'll have to look that up. It's still, BlackBerry's got a lot to lose, and that's why they're coming out with these new models.
Yeah, it's definitely the enterprise choice for the better part. I mean, you know, even our government uses the BlackBerry system. And
yeah, primarily because the BlackBerry has the ability to wipe the phone if it gets lost remotely, if it's connected to a BizConnect server.
Sure.
It also has encryption built in. So if you use your password to lock your phone, pretty much it makes it very, very hard for people to get in to get to your contacts. Along with that remote wipe capability, it's a good phone. And there was some talk of some of that functionality showing up in the iPhone, but I haven't really seen it yet.
It's a very neat world we live in, because you wouldn't have thought that so many people would be carrying smartphone devices and things like that what, 3 years ago or so. No. It's primarily still clamshell phones, and very few people, except for these high-end type of users, that had email and internet streaming on their device. And now it's almost a staple. Everyone needs that for photo, video, and, you know, even things like Twitter, twitter.com/JTolliver.
I guess I'm twitter.com/boomer0042.
True.
I play with Twitter just a little bit. I've also been experimenting with Laconica.
Ah.
If you
tell me about it. No,
Laconica is a Twitter-like system that you can put on your own server, and you can have your own Twitter-like community, but they're federated instances. So let's say you, Joe, had your own Laconica server, and I had my own Laconica server, but different members wanted to pull the equivalent of tweets from each other, the servers will interchange back and forth with each other.
Oh.
And they can actually pull messages from Twitter. But the idea is Twitter's gotten so big and there's so many users on it now.
That, and it crashes often.
And it crashes often. If you can run your own microblogging site.
Sure.
Then why not? And so that's what people are doing. I heard about it first on This Week in Tech. Leo Laporte set up one of those servers. I think it was twitarmy.com.
Oh, okay.
That's where I heard the interview. Actually, no, I heard the interview on Floss Weekly.
Okay.
Free Libra open source software. It's another Twit Network podcast. And they brought on the guy that wrote Laconica. It's still very early. It's only in 0.5 release.
Wow.
0.6 is coming out sometime in the next few weeks. But I set up a server at our office, and I've been experimenting with it, and it's interesting. It's still rough, but it's interesting.
Yeah, we found out that we say interesting often. However, I looked at all of my podcasts and stuff from Revision 3 over to Twit Network, and everybody says interesting. So I think we'll be all right with it.
Yeah, we'll be fine.
Now, what I will say is I've noticed now that there's more and more of these kind of services that are provided for people to support their own. For example, the Tech Talk Guys site, we're kind of migrating to a Ning server. And so now you've got like Ning, which allows you to create your own social network, this Laconica, which allows you to create your own microblogging network. Obviously, you know, these engines are out there for your blogging service and everything. I think it's pretty powerful that we're giving end users the ability to create their own networks and kind of create all these mass diverse, you know, communities on very, very focused levels. I mean, I'm sure you could probably create your own social network on how to make cherry pies and
oh, absolutely.
People to join up.
Yeah, Ning is a real phenomenon. Ning, if it keeps at its current growth rate, by the end of this year, will be one of the top 10 internet sites in the world.
Wow.
Due to traffic, they are adding 1,500 communities a day.
My gosh.
It's just growing by leaps and bounds, and it's a very powerful tool. Since we've been experimenting with it, they've already done 3 software upgrades. They've added tons of functionality, and it's a completely free system, so you don't have to invest a whole lot of money. But it gets into this whole topic of cloud computing,
right?
Where, you know, instead of running your own servers and having your own infrastructure, you allow Google to host it for you. Gmail is a great example, or Google Docs. Well, now with Ning, if you want to run a social network and don't want to invest in the hardware, Ning will host it for you. Now, what they get is they get the Google AdWords revenue on the site, and that's how they make their money back. But that's going to be a big discussion point as time goes on, how much information we are comfortable with residing on other servers.
Yeah, up in the cloud.
Up in the cloud. It's an old telephone company term, the cloud. It was when you made your phone call, you kind of knew that you had a copper wire coming out of your house or your office and it went somewhere. And then when everybody would whiteboard it, they would go, okay, well, that call went into the cloud and it comes out of the cloud over in Los Angeles and goes down to that office kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, now that term has been picked up by the computing community, and actually Dell tried to trademark it, and I think they got blocked.
Yeah, no, you're right, because cloud computing, as far as, you know, like collaboration with wikis and you know, you mentioned Google Docs, that's a big one. We have in the company that I've joined now, we have a lot of stuff that we do as far as collaboration through Google Docs, and so it's not like sensitive information, but it's stuff that's sitting not on our servers. And yeah, it makes it easy to collaborate because the stuff's out there and, you know, you check it in and you're sharing and you can see the revisions. And so all the revisions are saved and it's powerful. And yet we really are moving away from, I mean, basically our machines are nothing more than a portal to whatever else we're doing on the outside.
Well, it goes into that whole conversation that's been talked about for a while. The browser is the application. The internet is the computer. And as we put more and more things on servers and we interact with the application, that becomes our touch point to all of our data. You know, we could go on a number of topics off this. We could talk about Google's Chrome browser. And
yeah, that's what I was actually thinking we'd segue into.
We could talk about Dropbox, which is another thing I'd like to chat about. But let's go ahead and talk about Chrome for a minute.
Well, yeah, we've had, you know, Firefox is the big open source browser of choice. I know Opera's kind of out there, but I don't think they're not open source. So Firefox was the big open source one, but just this past month, I think, Google announced its browser, Chrome. And it is a very minimalistic, very simple browser, very clean. It's actually done a few things that I've always wished Firefox would do, which is one is run each tab as a separate instance. That way, in case something crashes, it doesn't take down the entire browser. And two, it just makes it easy to move things around. For example, I mean, if you want to pull a tab out and then just boom, create a new window, I mean, it's done. It is very nice. It's actually now my kind of browser of choice on my PC machine. I do miss some of the extension stuff that I have on my Firefox.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, not some, all, because there is no extension support, really. The way I've done some of the workarounds for, like, my Delicious is using this, the JavaScript bookmarklet as a way of kind of getting the same sort of thing. But yeah, I'm missing all of my extensions in Firefox, but it's only a matter of time before that stuff comes through. But yeah, it's definitely a nice little browser. It's based off of Chrome being, you know, the framework and layout of a website. And so they just called it that, I believe, something off the CSS. And, it seems pretty well received for the most part. I don't think anybody's going to be hugely jumping ship.
Yeah, I listened to a podcast with Leo Laporte and Steve Gibson, Security Now, and Steve Gibson just ripped into Chrome for its security model.
Oh,
a basic lack of a security model, a number of things that are polished that Firefox has, it doesn't have things like being able to password protect your passwords. You know, in Firefox, you can go in and look at your passwords, but you can also put a password over that to protect that password list. So not anybody can just walk up to your machine and get that. But another factor with Chrome is the fact that it doesn't have the plugin support. Because each tab is its own separate process running, if you put an application layer that bound those together with add-on extension support, it could actually break the security model that it already has, being able to run each process separately.
Oh.
And so that's why it may be a little tough for Chrome to add extension support.
Oh, I see.
Another big thing that Chrome has is they've actually embedded into the base of the browser some Windows libraries that Microsoft open sourced a few years back. That's the reason we don't see Chrome on OS X and we don't see it on Linux because it relies on some core Windows libraries at in its guts.
Oh, I see.
So the question then becomes, who is the audience for Chrome? Who was Chrome written for? Now, some people would say Google's lifeblood is the browser.
Yeah.
Now, if that was the case, I think they would have worked to refine this product a little more before they released it.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are saying that the audience for Chrome is actually other software developers that develop for IE8 and for Firefox, hoping to get some of these technologies into their browsers. And apparently some of these features are in IE8. The ability to run separate tabs that are in separate memory space.
Sure.
IE8 is going to support that. The downside of that model is the fact that it takes longer to fire up each tab that you run because it's got to load the full software.
Right.
Put it in memory.
Per tab.
Do it per tab. The benefit is if a tab crashes out, it doesn't crash out your other ones. The downside is it takes longer to bring that tab up and the fact that it eats up more memory on your system. So there's been a couple of blogs that have talked about if you run 10 full tabs and check your memory usage on Chrome, you're looking at 300 to 400 megs of RAM being used up versus, you know, 270, 280 on a Firefox instance.
Sure.
But apparently that's similar to the performance that's being seen in an IE8 beta as well. You load that many tabs. Mm-hmm. Another interesting part about Chrome is the fact that it's based off of WebKit. And WebKit's the same HTML rendering engine that Safari is based off of. So it's interesting how they pulled together different pieces of different technology. They borrowed WebKit. They borrowed some of the processing layer from Microsoft and to build this engine. One thing we haven't touched on is the new JavaScript interpreter in Chrome. The JavaScript interpreter in Chrome is 30 times faster than what's seen in IE7 or Firefox.
Wow.
And they're saying that they actually made it a virtual engine inside for JavaScript rendering.
Uh-huh.
And some people are predicting that speed could get as high as 200 times faster than Firefox in the future. Now, if you can get JavaScript and dynamic HTML to work that quickly in a browser, now you have gotten the performance of the screen redraws as fast as native Windows applications.
Wow.
So now that app hosts them, now that there's an app that can be hosted on a website that can perform as quickly as an app hosted directly on your operating system, that'll further move people into trusting the cloud-based computing for their needs, because there's really wouldn't be any downside. As long as you have a fast web connection, it'd be the same as running the application natively on your desktop.
Wow. Okay. You just blew my mind. I haven't even read that much into Google Chrome. I've been using it as a kind of a dumb end user for the most part.
Well, the comic book talked a lot about that Google released for Chrome, kind of
right.
Explaining the technologies and how that worked. I have read that adoption of Chrome, when they released it, some sites were seeing as high as 4% of their traffic coming in from Chrome within the first few days. But then the traffic dropped off. By
people
the end
tried
of the
it, and then
week.
We're like,
"Oh, great, fast, but I don't have my features."
True.
Okay.
You bring up a very good point, because now that I think about it, the only thing I really launch in Chrome, because it's a quick way of launching it, is Gmail,
which is a Google application.
Which is a Google application. So, I mean, yeah, it's like it's usually just Gmail and Google Docs. That's truly it, because I have, you know, you can make the application shortcut through mm-hmm. Chrome, and then it just drops it using I think Google Gears.
Yep.
And so it powers it right up off of the machine, and so that boots quickest. But yeah, for most of my other browsing, I mean, obviously on my Mac, the only thing I do use is still Safari. I mean, I'm sorry, Firefox.
Yeah, I'm a Firefox fan on my Mac too.
Yeah.
Which is another development that's happened over the last 2 years. Christmas of 06, I bought a little MacBook. As soon as I got my hands on it, I put 3 gigs of RAM in it and put a bigger hard drive, and I'm really loving the Mac experience.
That's true. Bill, since then, every event that had photographic opportunities, Bill would take pictures, dump them on the MacBook, and it was a common sight to see soon afterwards Bill walking around with the MacBook open and just the glow of his Mac bathing people in the photos that he took immediately.
Bathing. I think I did that at your wedding.
Yes, you did it at my wedding, at Ryan and Krista's wedding.
Yeah, well, I like taking photos, and it's fun to share them immediately.
Speaking of something to take photos of, Bill is now a proud father.
Yes.
He is.
Yes, the next generation of geek has been born, and it's a she, not a he.
Yeah, and she's absolutely adorable, and she's almost already straight geeked out because she watches Elmo on the Mac, and
she watches Elmo on the iPhones. She reaches for the keyboard every time she's around it. It's going to be very interesting to see how she grows and develops, and how much geekiness she picks up from me, and how much artistic side she picks up from her mom. And parenting has been a fun journey to this point, and I think it'll continue to be fun. So I'm looking forward to the future of watching her learn.
Yeah, yeah, because, you know, I have a new job now where I work with an educational technology company integrating you know, this interactive technology in the classroom. And I'm doing some reading by Mark Prensky about digital natives and digital immigrants, those born post 1982, 81, mm-hmm. compared to those before, and how teachers have to understand they're teaching to a completely different generation now. Take a 3-year-old or a 4-year-old, hand them a cell phone. You don't need to tell them how to use it. Whereas I remember, I mean, as a child for myself, I didn't have a cell phone until, gosh, middle school, late middle school. And
I'm laughing because I didn't have my first cell phone until college.
Yeah, but, you know, and so, for example, my company has actually developed a student response system which allows them to text message. Wow. It has a full numeric pad, and so they put in their answers with that, and it submits it so that the teacher can see all the short answers on the board. So we're accessing a skill set that these students already have, and, you know, texting, you know, numerically by pressing number 2 3 times to get the letter C, people wouldn't have understood that a few years back.
I've been amazed at the adoption of texting by adults. I never really thought it would catch on, and it's happening more and more. I'm seeing it more and more, conversations that happen real quick on a text. It's even kind of taking over from the instant messaging space.
Yeah,
to some degree. You know, my wife and I have talked a lot about what our daughter's world is going to be like. You know, first year, a little concerned. Should she be so dependent on having to watch Elmo on the laptop?
Right.
But at the same time, it's going to be the world she lives in. Her world will be filled with LCD screens.
Yeah.
Her world, you know, there'll be OLEDs or whatever, right, as time goes on. But her skills in interacting with electronic media is going to be dependent upon her success and her career and her education and everything else. So on one hand, I was a little reticent. And as time goes on, I'm a little more accepting of it. You know, I was born in 1971, so I'm before that digital divide. But I was always electronically aware. Even my toys and things, even in the early 80s were electronic. So I feel like a digital native.
Sure.
I've always, you know, kept up with technology. My dad was, you know, very involved with CB radios and things. And we had, you know, soldering irons around the house.
Right.
And my parents bought an Atari and played it for them, not me, when I was 5 years old. So
yeah.
I've always had, you know, electronics around, and, you know, Commodore VIC 20, Commodore 64, PCs as I went off to college, you know. So I've always had that around my life. But it is interesting to think of what my daughter's world is going to be like.
Yeah.
She is, yeah, she won't ever remember a time where there wasn't a cell phone. She won't remember a time where there wasn't always on internet.
Yes, that's true.
Or DVRs.
Yeah, know, content DVR on demand. Yeah.
She knows the sound of a TiVo blip. Now, if we actually have to mute the stereo to move around the TiVo if she's in the room, because if she hears that blip, she thinks Sesame Street's coming on. I mean, if she was awake right now, I could show you. Her head would whip right around and look right at the TV because she knows that sound is Sesame Street coming on.
Wow.
And she's only 9 months old.
Wow.
And she's been doing that since she was 5 months old, which that's kind of scary on one hand, but on the other hand, that's going to be the world she
lives
in.
That's true. Time shift to television and things like that. Instead of, you know, the TV guide is dead. I mean,
oh, yeah.
You know when the TV show's coming on, just put a season pass for it and then you watch it every time it comes on.
Well, I was talking to somebody, you know, as awesome as the iPhone has been for me, I think TiVo's still been the most impactful technological advance of my adult life. I mean, computers have been here, obviously,
for
a long time, but the ability to time shift with TiVo completely takes you away from having to watch whenever the networks want to put it on. It also gives you the ability to take an hour show and cut it down to 45 minutes. But at the same time, I still see the ads on TV even as I'm fast forwarding. And if they're good ads, I'll stop.
Yeah.
If there's a new Apple ad coming on, I always stop, rewind, and watch it.
Yeah.
Speaking of ads, what did you think of the Gates Seinfeld stuff?
At first, it was just weird. They're just talking about shoes and then they're walking out and Bill Gates shakes his rear end or adjusts his shorts or something like that. Just,
yeah,
it's
what I want to know is what's the grandmother that keeps running around doing all the work in the house? Is that Windows? Is that Windows 95 on up? Is that, you know, 13 years? One of the little quips in there is, you know, she's been with us for 7 years or something like
that. Right, yeah.
Which would kind of be the dawn of XP, wouldn't it?
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, grandma's getting the job done. She's under the car, finding a broken head gasket. She's taking the laundry out. She's weed whacking in the backyard. She's doing all of this stuff. Was the shoe store an analogy for the Apple store? Because remember, Bill Gates' shoe size was a 10. Was that an analogy for OS 10?
So, wow, you really broke that one down.
Who knows what all this is about? Now, in fairness, I've listened to too many podcasts talking about it. So, and by the way, if you haven't watched the ad on the Microsoft website, watch the full ad.
Okay.
What you see on TV is only half.
I see.
And it's actually funny, and it makes a little bit more sense when you watch the full ad.
Well, maybe that was it. Just that was the bait and switch to try and get you to go to Microsoft to watch.
Well, now Seinfeld's part is done. He only did 2 episodes. That's it.
Right. Well, I know they paid him bang for it because they were getting taken as far as, you know, everybody loves the I'm a Mac, I'm a PC commercial. And then, of course, there's a whole rigmarole when PC came. Well, I'm sorry. Microsoft came out with the Mojave experiment where they duped people into believing that, and I don't know if you noticed it, but at first it didn't say these aren't actors, these are real people. At first it didn't say any of that stuff. And so everybody was like, well, shoot, these are all actors because these are the most fake, over-exaggerated sort of reactions. Then they put a disclaimer saying that they were real people.
Well, here's the problem with that whole campaign. If you go to the website and you watch the video, for the first 45 seconds, the only thing you hear is how bad Vista is by people. I mean, it's the worst marketing campaign in history. My product sucks, and all these people are telling the world it sucks, and I'm putting that out there. It's not like, what do you think of Vista? I think Vista's horrible. But after I've done the Mojave experiment, I think it's great.
Yeah.
They didn't do that in the first 15 seconds of the marketing.
No,
it's so just, if you just give it 45 seconds and then walk away, which is the average adult attention span.
Yeah, even then you think that Vista is horrible.
It really does stink. Great. Wonderful.
Yeah.
So yeah, lots happened in tech since we've done a lot.
Yeah, no, podcast. Absolutely.
Yeah, Vista actually probably has come out since then.
I think
then.
It did.
It did.
My gosh.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been running Vista since April of 2007.
Mm-hmm.
On my work laptop, it's a Dell D810, Pentium M 1.7, had a gig of RAM, was really dog slow until I upgraded it to 2 gigs of RAM. And when I went to 2 gigs, made a world of difference with Vista, but I'm still not a fan. I think I would have been more impressed with Vista if I hadn't started using a Mac maybe 6 months before.
Yeah.
I would have probably been wowed by the interface and thought it was great. But the more I played with Vista, the more I'm like, OS 10 is already doing this and it does it better.
Yeah, absolutely. Reminds me of that banner that I saw when Leopard was getting released where it was just a simple phrase. It says, okay, Redmond, get your Xerox machines ready. Because, I mean, if you look at a lot of things that Aero does, it's basically, you know, what's already in Leopard.
Yeah. Well, I want to jump back to the cloud computing discussion. There's a great little product out there. And right now it's free, and they claim it'll be free for a while. It's called Dropbox. You can go to getdropbox.com. And what Dropbox is, it's a file sharing system, but it has a twist to it. With Dropbox, you get 2 gigs of storage on their system. And what happens is you load this client on your desktop and you create your Dropbox account and you just copy files into the Dropbox folder on your local hard drive. And whatever files get placed in that folder get automatically copied up to the Dropbox Amazon server cloud that's out there, and your files are stored there. So let's say you have a home computer and a work computer. Well, you can load the Dropbox client on your work computer, and whatever files you move from home up to the cloud will be automatically replicated down to your work computer at the same
time. I see.
And it is cross-platform. I've tested it on Windows, Mac, and Linux, Ubuntu 8.04, and it keeps the files perfectly in sync.
Hmm.
Almost immediately, I could hear the files when I went from my Windows machine to my Linux machine. Almost immediately when I dropped the files in the folder on the Windows machine, the Linux hard drive started clicking. It was that quick, file replication. And the other thing is, anywhere you are with a web browser in the world, you can get access to your files that are stored on the Amazon network. So you don't have to use the client when you're on the road.
Right.
So if you want to use it for things like notes, one of the things I use it for is my start page for my browser. I have a little HTML page that has all my links. Now, everywhere I am, I point my browser to that start page in the Dropbox folder.
Sure.
And it's the same on all the systems I interact with throughout the day. It's fast. It's free. Apparently, they're going to come out with a pay service that'll let you store like 50 gigs in the cloud. But for now, the 2 gigs is free. I've put probably 400 or 500 files in there, and I'm only using like 25% of my space.
Yeah. Wow, that's pretty... I mean, that's a lot easier than doing the whole Gmail attachment to yourself all of that absolutely. Business.
And I find it even easier than a jump drive.
Really? Some
degree. Yeah. Because it's almost like fire and forget, you know, put it in that folder.
Yeah.
It's going to replicate in the background.
That's a good point. Well, I'll definitely have to try it out. And then maybe around the next podcast, we can talk about it some more.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Well, what else do we have on the docket there, Bill? Any sites we want to plug? Well, actually, to talk about the time shifted TV, here's something. You know, I got married this past June, and my wife and I moved into our house, and we very briefly had a television, and then I got rid of the television for other reasons, not religious or anything like that. But what we did end up doing was is we don't actually have television at home. When I say that, I don't mean I don't pay for a service. And I'm not even using network HD or anything like that in my house. Both my wife and I watch almost all of our shows entirely on Hulu.com.
I thought you were going to say Hulu.
Yeah, and because it's basically all of the shows that we like to watch. And they stream very well. It's very short ads. Now, given my wife has a affinity for the certain Saturn commercial that has a very catchy song in the middle of it. But, and I don't know, maybe that's part of Saturn's thing, because now whenever that song comes on, it's just da, 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 gets stuck in our heads every time. But I was reading on kind of a wrap-up about the NBC Olympics that just happened in Beijing, which the Olympics happened since the last time we were on the podcast.
Yeah, that happened too.
But it was nearly completely broadcast, simulcasted on the internet as well. And I think they said nearly, 20% of the viewership was through the internet piece.
Right.
And there's a lot more of internet-based television that's out there. You know, all of these episodes are now being provided online for free in some degrees, other than some of your premium shows that come on, like your Showtime and HBO. But more and more, it's becoming easier to, you know, it's not people that have to torrent episodes off of some of those peer-to-peer kind of networks. That now, I mean, I don't know when I'm actually going to get a TV. I mean, I want to get one, but it's just easier right now for us to watch all of our shows. Maybe a day later, but it's time shifted anyway. We don't actually sit up at Thursday at 9 p.m. to catch The Office right when it comes on.
Right. Yeah. Well, I do have Comcast HD. I have a Comcast DVR and I have a TiVo HD. The TiVo experience is so much better than Comcast DVR, but almost everything my wife and I watch is time shifted. I even watch football time shifted. I'll set it up to record and come in and watch it halfway through the game and fast forward. It's great to watch football in high speed. You can put it up like 2x speed and the guys move real fast. Something looks interesting. You rewind the play, take a look. You get your own instant replay that way. But time shifting TV is radically changed my lifestyle, if you will.
But, you know, kind of the thing with the Hulu is now, I guess, in a way, even my TV watching experience has now moved to the cloud.
Yep.
Because I'm not watching it over the air or through normal means. We are watching it off of our laptops and hooked up to external monitors and stuff. But, yeah, I guess this episode's really about the cloud.
Well, have you, we'll call it the cloud episode. Yeah. Well, have you thought about getting an HD tuner for your computer?
I have definitely considered that.
Now, one thing that's absolutely amazing is HDTV over the air.
Yeah.
The quality is unbelievable. Yeah, it's actually better than what you get on cable.
That's what I hear, because, I mean, even with these guys that, you know, get the Dish Network box and all, they still get the little, what, $40 to $100 HD antenna that you can pick up at your Best Buy or Radio Shack.
Well, if you look over there right now, you see those rabbit ears to the left of the TV?
Yeah.
That's what I'm using to pick up HD.
Really?
And it works great.
You don't need any of that special?
Nope.
Wow.
That's a regular old RCA rabbit ear set. Nothing special. It's plugged into the back of the TiVo DVR, and it picks up all the channels great.
Coming over coax?
No.
No.
It's coming over the air.
No. I understand that, but like it's connected to the DVR by coax.
It's connected to the TiVo.
TiVo.
Actually, it's going through a little... If you remember, the old antennas had that flat cable.
Yeah.
And it gave you two little spade
plugs thing.
Yeah. I've got a little converter that converts that into a cable input. So I'm not even running like the purest, cleanest version of an antenna.
It's not like RG6 through. Yeah.
No, it's messy. And I'm still getting like, I think the lowest I get is like 78% signal strength, which if you looked at it, you couldn't tell.
Yeah.
You looked at the actual screen. So I record football over the air.
Right.
I don't record it on Fox.
Because it's sharper.
It's much sharper.
Wow.
Much sharper.
Huh?
And by the way, on the digital side, you get, you know, typically two or three channels per regular channel.
Right.
So they're broadcasting, like, the local NBC affiliate has three channels. It's main, and then it's got two side channels. The PBS has a main and two side channels.
Okay.
Now, typically, the side channels are only 480p. They're right. Not 720 or 1080, but it's worth checking out.
I will have to check it out now. Now, I'll definitely consider getting an HD tuner for my machine.
Yeah, once we're done, I'll show you. I'll show you what it looks like.
Cool. Well, what's our time look like?
44 minutes.
That's longer than our last episode that we released.
Yeah.
I think that should make our consumers happy.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely sign up at techtalkguys.ning.com. And we might do a domain name shift so that it's just techtalkguys.com.
We might do a domain name shift. I think it'll cost us, what, $5 a month?
We can split the difference, maybe.
I'll let you buy that. I'm paying for the podcast downloads.
I got a new job now. I can take care of
it. You can take care of that?
Yeah.
Well, next time, I'd love to delve into the open source world.
Sure.
I've been playing with Ubuntu Linux. First time in my dabbling with Linux that I actually feel like they've got a solid product.
Okay. Yeah, and I can actually pull my wife in maybe, because she very briefly was using Ubuntu Linux on her, what was it? I don't remember what version it was. It was a Dell laptop. The Windows XP OS crashed and we couldn't really fix it because I didn't have a recovery disk and all that. So I just wiped it, put Ubuntu on it, and she loved Sudoku on that thing. It's a very clean product. The install was very, very nice. So yeah, we'll talk about Ubuntu and other open source options.
Yeah, I want to talk about that. I want to talk about virtualization. That's another big topic that's impacted my work world and now impacting my home computing world. Things like VirtualBox, VMware, Parallels on the Mac, VMware Fusion on the Mac.
Absolutely.
So those are definitely some upcoming topics we can talk about. And if you listeners have anything you want us to talk about, please email us info@techtalkguys.com. Joe and I both get that. Or please start a comment thread on Ning, techtalkguys.ning.com. Put your questions, put your comments. We'd love to hear your feedback, how you think we've done after 2 years. And we definitely want to bring more people into the conversation. We've got a few friends lined up that we want to add to the conversation from time to time and really kind of make it a free-flowing dialogue.
You know, we're on Skype, and, you know, we're available through Skype that way. Mine's just Jay Tolliver. So if you find us and want to chat, we can bring you in the conversation.
Sounds good.
What if we had a live caller show?
Ooh. But what if we got questions we couldn't answer?
Oh, that's a good point. I don't know. We could
kind of be like, you know, Click and Clack on NPR, the Tappet Brothers, you know, Hard Talk guys. That episode they call Stump the Chumps.
Oh, I haven't heard that one.
Oh, yeah. I'll play a clip.
Okay. All right.
All right. Well, thank you for listening.
Yeah. Thanks for listening. And See, we never know how to end the show.
We never do.
We still don't. It's episode 6 now. I know.
Episode 6.
I feel like we should call it something else. Like, you know, when you use a higher number on your checks, just so people don't think you just started a checking account.
No, no. We got to be real.
We got to be real. Keep it real. This is episode 6.
That's going to be a real time gap, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Since our post in, what, 2006?
Yeah. It was a while ago.
All right. Well, thanks for listening again.
Later.
Please check out our website at www.techtalkguys.com.